Welcome to this Farming and Water Scotland podcast. My name is Seamus Murphy, and on today's podcast, Pete Wright from SEPA speaks to SEPA's catchment coordinators. Pete himself has 13 years experience working for SEPA and is a catchment coordinator in the north of Scotland. They give their first-hand accounts on some of the good work being done by farmers to reduce diffuse pollution. And they'll also talk about some of the measures that are put in place on farms to help reduce pollution risks and also benefiting the farm business in other ways. For more information on these topics and many, many more, please visit the Farming and Water Scotland website and follow us on Facebook and Twitter. We hope you enjoy the podcast.
So thank you very much for joining the Farming and Water Scotland podcast, which is going to be dealing with some of the issues and some of the activities that the National Rural Unit of SEPA deal with on a day-to-day basis. I'm joined today by a couple of the officers who are going to introduce themselves in a minute. But basically, the idea of today's podcast is to give you an idea of the kind of activities that we get involved in and the importance of working together with the agriculture and land-based sectors. So over to the important people on today's podcast. So I'm going to pass over to Adam to introduce himself and give a bit of an idea of the kind of experiences he's got and brings to the team.
Yeah, I still feel like when I'm introducing myself, I have to say that I'm new to SEPA, but when I sit down and think about it, I've actually been working here for almost 6 years. Prior to joining SEPA, I've kind of done a little bit of work in the academic fields. I've done a small bit of consultancy work and then joined SEPA in around 2014. And I've been working in the rural kind of space ever since then. Like all my background experience has in some way been involved in the rural sectors and particularly focusing on their impact and interaction with water quality. So yeah, right up the kind of street of the sort of stuff we're working at in SEPA at the moment and hopefully what we'll be discussing more today.
Great stuff. And over to you, Julie.
Hi, Pete. So I'm Julie Partridge. I have actually just been with SEPA for a couple of years, so I think of myself as a relative newbie. I've been with the team for 2 years now. Prior to that, I grew up on a farm, so I've got a fairly decent agricultural background. And then I went off gallivanting, doing some odds and sods. So I've worked in outdoor education, I've worked in drainage and flooding. And about 5 years ago, I came back up to the northeast, and I was actually working with the department with farm inspections.
Great stuff. So, just from the two officers that we're speaking to there, Adam and Julie, you can see the breadth of information and breadth of knowledge that the National Rural Unit brings to SEPA. And the National Rural Unit, which was previously called the Land Unit, was set up about 10 years ago to basically deal with the agriculture and land-based activity sector in Scotland, such as farming and forestry. And it was identified as a really important sector because the way that these sectors get dealt with has to be significantly different than some of the other work that SEPA normally gets involved in because of the dynamic nature of the sector. And obviously, you need a dynamic team to deal with that. So the National Rural Unit was set up. Other than the kind of project work that we get involved in, which we'll talk about in a moment, which is called the Diffuse Pollution Priority Catchment Work, other than that kind of work, what kind of work do you get involved in on tell us a kind of a standard day in normal times as an officer for the National Rural Unit?
I can jump in there, Pete, for a second, if that works for you. You've touched on the kind of the fact that we all kind of do our work in kind of delivering Scotland's rural diffuse pollution plan. So that's kind of the bread and butter of our job, going out and meeting farmers, discussing kind of how their farm operates and looking at diffuse pollution and hopefully addressing any issues on those farms and helping farmers first reach compliance with any regulations, but also trying to promote good practice where we can. But I kind of have a second string to my kind of work in SEPA. I kind of think kind of drawing on some of my academic background and some of the other experience that I have. And again, you'll find that with everyone across our team. I think people have a varied kind of skill set. But essentially, I work on a range of different scientific projects out with the team as well. We try to track changes in water quality, use data to target our work on the ground effectively. And also, we try to work on kind of untangling that complex interaction between different sectors in the rural economy so that we understand the impact that agriculture is having on water quality, and similarly we understand the impact that other sectors are having, which allows us to target our work and be really, really effective.
Great stuff. So, I mean, a brilliant example of the kind of the reason why the National Rural Unit exists there is that we bring those different kind of skill sets together. And I almost see it as like a common sense check. You know, the information gets brought towards you, then we can deal with it directly with the sector when we go out and deliver things face to face, or whether we're delivering things to an audience in a seminar room or whatever it may be. It's definitely an important part of our work, is that breadth of knowledge that we bring to the stuff. So great stuff, Adam. And Julie, what, you're based in a slightly different part of Scotland than Adam. So what kind of things have you got involved in? You've not been in SEPA for as long. So give us an idea of the kind of things that you've been involved in as well.
So the sort of work that I get a bit more involved in up here is working alongside the other teams, maybe within SEPA, whether it be the local teams that maybe don't have the same agricultural background as I do, providing a bit of backup for them and just advising them a little bit on different issues that they might not technically understand so well. They understand the rules and regulations, but sometimes they... knowing a bit about the background of why people are operating in certain ways definitely helps them when it comes to looking at any issues that may arise. And also just general awareness amongst the agricultural community, whether that's through attending roadshows and events, just to provide a face that local people can recognise as works for SEPA, and they've got someone they can contact if they're unsure about anything, because a lot of the rules and regulations, they can be a bit of a minefield, and unless people prefer a bit of face-to-face contact when it comes to asking questions as opposed to picking up a phone. So that's the sort of thing so far, but it always changes.
It's ever changing, the kind of stuff we get involved in, and just two great examples of some of the stuff that our team do get involved in. So taking it back to the kind of the reason why the land unit, which is now called the National Rural Unit, started, was on the back of the Diffuse Pollution Plan for Scotland. And I'm going to hand over to you guys to broadly talk about what this diffuse pollution issue is all about and how we go about dealing with it on a catchment-wide basis and why particular catchments were chosen. So it's up to yourselves, whoever talks about it, but what I want to have a little bit of a chat about is kind of how catchments were identified for being a problem and why we might need to go and have a chat with some of the land managers in the area. And then also the kind of way that we go about delivering these important one-to-one farm visits with the landowners and see where we go from there. So over to you guys and have a quick chat about that.
Yeah, I'm happy to say a little bit about that first, if you like, Pete. Basically, like all of the catchments that we work on within the land unit or the rural unit as we are now, are in some way they're failing to meet environmental quality standards. So there's obviously some kind of water quality issue in all of these catchments, and we have the kind of background water quality data or modeling information or whatever to understand that diffuse pollution is one of the main contributing factors, or at least it plays a part in that kind of impacted situation. So you could be looking at drinking water sources, bathing waters, areas where the ecology of a particular system is impacted. And when we have that information, we then designate that catchment as a kind of a priority catchment. And it's then that people like, well, myself and Julie would end up out on the ground meeting those farmers to try and to improve their actions and hopefully improve water quality in the longer term. So like if you take my part of the country, so I work in the kind of southeast in a kind of a subgroup, if you like. And there we've got a couple of catchment coordinators who I work under. And after an individual catchment becomes designated as a priority catchment, we would have kind of a launch event to, you know, inform all the landowners in the area of what we're doing, what the issues are, and get them up to speed with the sort of process that we go through.
So you've got science-led information which is sending to a particular catchment. You've got a team of specialists who can deal with the sector with a good knowledge base behind it as well, and you tell people the information that we've got, so we're open and transparent at the start of that process, which is really important, because one thing I've learned through working in the agricultural sector is they like to know what's going on, and I think that's really important. I think that's something that SEPA's really improved on in the last few years. We've become a lot more open with the sector, and I think it's led to some great results. So we're into a catchment. We've got a list of farms we know need to go and visit. Now, Julie, how would you go about setting up the task of going out and delivering this quite large amount of work? So give us an idea of the kind of the process behind getting an inspection ready, and then what actually happens during one of these one-to-one diffuse pollution inspections.
So as you've said, it can be a monumental task. If you just think about the number of farms within a single catchment, you're talking about hundreds, if not up into 1,000 plus farms. So the first thing is actually figuring out the best way to use the staff that we've got, use the resources we've got to target what's going to have the biggest impact, I suppose. So any farm over 30 hectares will automatically get a visit. The catchments are divided up into water bodies or burns. And then personally, I'll just pick a burn, work my way through the farms that are due to have a visit. So each farm will get a letter sent out a couple of weeks in advance, just to make them aware of what we're going to do and that we're coming out to have a look. Quite often that means we'll get a phone call back. Sometimes when we've said we're coming out isn't always appropriate, and that's fine. We try to be as flexible as we can with the people we're going to visit, because we understand that farming changes every single day, and sometimes things do take a big priority over somebody getting a visit. And usually having that discussions with the farmers, it's great. We have a phone call, we can explain a bit more about what we're doing, and we can meet up with them at a time which works for them and it works for us. Once the date's been set and we get out to a farm, the first thing we usually do is meet the farmer face to face, if we can. That way, again, we can explain any questions they've got about the process and what we're going to be doing and what we want to have a look at.
So you've turned up on your site, and they know you're coming. You've introduced yourself. They've got an idea of what's going on. So now the next part of the work, in my opinion, is probably the most important part of the work that we do as SEPA. It's getting that one-to-one interaction with the farmer and getting to know that farm. Speak us through the inspection, how it's, rather than it being an inspection, it's more of a kind of a two-way approach to getting some environmental benefits on that farm. So how do we go about delivering that inspection, and what are we looking for when we're actually looking at these farms and these units? Because inspection on a farm could mean absolutely anything. So give us an idea of the kind of things that we're looking for, and then the kind of what we do with that information once we've collected it, and how we feed that back to the farmer.
With regard to the farm visits, for me, I think I can also speak on behalf of most of the people that I work with. Like, I think most of us are genuinely interested in farming, and the first thing that I would always do when I go out on a farm is to speak to the farmer and have a chat about the farm, really understand what it is that they're doing, what industries they're involved in. Are they a mixed farm, arable, livestock? You know, how is the industry at the moment? And that really lets you understand the pressures they're under and the reasons that they might have ended up in the kind of situation they're in at the moment. I find getting off on that footing, an equal footing, allows you to have a really good and useful discussion. During a typical farm visit, you end up having to do a few different things. You end up having a look at the steading and the infrastructure there, also taking a look at the fields, and then kind of, if there are any issues, trying to figure a way forward. But I think the key point that we're trying to get across is that, okay, we do have to complete certain regulatory checks, but we're not people who are interested in getting tied down in the nitty-gritty of the regulations. We're as much about promoting good practice, trying to help farmers kind of improve their business, become more efficient. So I find anyway, like the first part of the visit, after you've done your introductions and things like that, you end up having a walk around the steading, chatting about the farm, but you're kind of doing an informal audit of all of the kind of farm infrastructure as you go around. So on a livestock farm, for example, you'd be checking that things like the silage pit is in good state of repair. Similarly, if there's any slurry storage infrastructure, that's been like regularly checked and things like that. I often find that us coming on farm it's a sort of an opportunity for the farmer to take the time out and think about his own infrastructure. So they'll often be aware of, you know, the need to maintain a silage pit or whatever might be relevant on any day. But this just provides a kind of a moment in time to do that bit of work. With regard to kind of the field element of the of the visit, we would tend to, different people might do it in slightly different ways. I would usually head off by myself for a walk around the farm, take a look at some of the water margins. Like on a livestock farm, you'd be looking for areas where perhaps livestock have historically drunk out of water courses to see if they're causing any kind of significant water quality issues. You're kind of just taking a look at the farm from a fresh perspective, maybe looking at it in a slightly different way, in that we have a combination of a regulatory hat and an environmental background. So we can just see things from a different perspective. And usually after you're finished that kind of walk around the farm, you usually catch up with the farmer again at the end and have a chat, kind of discuss any issues that might have arisen or that you might have seen during the day, discuss remediation measures that are actions that the farmer kind of can take on, things that are realistic and might work on that individual farm. We'd also discuss a time frame for doing any kind of fixes that might be required. Like we touched earlier on a silage pit or a slurry store situation. Like if there was an obvious serious pollution incident happening, we'd be looking for that to be fixed almost instantly, maybe that day or that week. But typically when you're talking about diffuse pollution, you're looking at more slight changes in management, that type of stuff. And here we would almost always give farmers a year to get things done, to let them consider their options, etc.
So a couple of things you picked up on there, which I'm going to pass over to Julie just to explore a little bit, is the fact that it's all about this collaboration approach and also looking at things in a slightly different way. Because when I first started back in Seaburn and joined the land unit as was then, I was told your farm visit will start a mile away from the farm and then it will carry on all day until you leave that farm, which is very unusual for the kind of work that SEPA normally gets involved in, because SEPA normally regulates sites which have got a license. And a farm generally doesn't have a license. They've just got regulations they need to comply with. But a lot of our work is based on that good practice. So I'm going to pass over to Julie and just say, how do you go about discussing making those improvements with the farmer? Because I think this is where the National Rural Unit tries to do its best work, is that collaborative approach. So Julie, give us an idea of when you've been to a farm, you've started that working relationship with that individual and that business. How do you then go about thinking about putting into practice those things that you've picked up and then trying to almost sell the environmental gains that they'll get by putting in some good practice? And can you give us some examples of the kind of good practice activities that you've seen put into some of these places?
I think it's definitely one of the most sometimes challenging but enjoyable parts is selling the environmental gain to the farm as opposed to just the economic cost, which is quite often involved, and it's quite often a barrier that can put people off implementing these some of the measures that are required in order to kind of either reach compliance or just to improve the environment. I mean, some of the biggest things I've noticed recently, and one of the biggest problems that we've got in some of our catchments up in Northeast are the amount of cattle waterings, because traditionally the ditches have just been opened, livestock have been able to go in and have a drink whenever, and the problems associated with poaching and the diffuse pollution risk that comes alongside that is only really been highlighted and brought to light as the environments come more into focus, more into the public eye, and there's been a bigger emphasis on environmental measures being in place on farms. So as I was saying, one of the kind of big differences is the amount of alternative waterings that I'm seeing as I go around now. I think even 2 years ago when I was going into farms, one of the first things that farmers would automatically say to me was, well, I've got a cattle watering, I suppose I have to fence that off now. And sometimes I'd say, well, and I always say, let's go and have a look in the tent. There's no other way I can get water up to my cattle here. And they were unaware of the fact that there are things like solar panel powered pumps and ram pumps that can work on a farm fairly easily, even if there's not a big gradient in water courses. So it's a big part of our job is just raising awareness of different options that are there, and the fact that they're not always as expensive as initially they have seemed.
So Adam, you've completed the farm inspection. You've given the farmer a bit of time to put some of the measures in place. Can you talk about some of the benefits that the farmers have discussed with you that they've got from putting some of these measures in place?
Yeah, like I would like to think that maybe a year down the road after a farm visit, the majority of farmers will kind of have embraced what they've done and really thought it was a good idea. Like on a livestock farm, for example, if we take like livestock away from drinking from water courses as an example, like farmers have talked about that kind of added security or peace of mind around not either passing any animal health issues downstream that they may have, or also protecting their stock from any animal health issues that may be present on farms further up the catchment. So there's a real obvious animal health benefit there. And similarly, we've worked with a number of farms, particularly in my case down in the borders, where farmers have put in kind of extensive networks of drinking water troughs throughout their farm. And it means that they have a really reliable source of water all year round, and similarly in dry years. So sometimes if farms had historically been relying on small burns flowing in off the side of a hill or whatever as a source of water, that had the potential to dry up, which then has the knock-on impact of farmers either having to cart water around the place or graze fields in a rotation that they might not have otherwise planned. So that kind of added flexibility is really good for farms, I think. And as I said, I don't think there's too many people who do these things and look back on it as a bad idea. It's possibly a little bit of a mindset change needed at the start. And similarly, like on the arable side, we spoke earlier about like why a lot of these catchments are designated or why they come into our priority catchment approach. But a lot of the issues relate to kind of, what's the word I'm trying to think of? Impacted ecology. So the ecology in the various water courses might not be what it should be. And how I always explain that to farmers is that like the nutrients that they're using on their farm, their phosphorus and their nitrogen, they should be growing crops in the farm. But unfortunately, if they're lost off the farm, they'll have the same impact in the water courses. So they'll grow different plants and algae and stuff in freshwater systems. I guess the most obvious example of that is when you see a loch or a reservoir turning green with an algal bloom. But there's much more subtle but similar things going on in running water, so in streams and burns. And it's really about tapping into that benefit. We're trying to get farmers to keep that nutrient on their land for as long as possible and use it to grow crops. So that's when we're encouraging people to do things like soil testing, reduce soil erosion. And you do hear farmers regularly saying that when they get proper soil analysis done, that they do save at least the cost of the analysis, if not more, on saved fertilizer bills. So it seems like there are a lot of win-wins there for the farm and the environment.
So Julie, you've been on the farm and you've discussed the results of your finding with the farmer. What kind of advice can you give him?
Well, if I'm completely honest with you, I'm not an advisor. I'm not a farm advisor. My job is an environmental protection officer. And I always kind of make this clear to the farmers when I'm having these discussions is I'm not on their farm to tell them how to farm or how to run and do what they're doing, because I couldn't. They don't get enough credit for how complicated it can be to run a farm. My job is to make sure that they are protecting the environment and abiding by the regulations. So what I generally do after I've had the discussions with them about what needs to be improved or areas that could potentially be improved, I generally will direct them towards a source of information that doesn't always cost an arm and a leg. It can sometimes even be free. Something like the Farm and Water Scotland website that's got a lot of good technical guidance backed up by organisations like the SSC. They can quite often find this information at the agricultural shows and the likes as well, if they'd rather speak to somebody face-to-face or pick up a leaflet, which a lot of people prefer with a hard copy or something.
Julie, you talked about there about things that are kind of seen as traditional problems on a farm, especially a livestock farm, contaminated water from steadings, and also livestock drinking from water courses causing issues. Adam, I know you're involved in some more kind of forward-thinking issues related to some of the arable sector work that you're involved in. Do you want to give a little bit of information about where this work in the priority catchments is kind of taking you in the direction?
Yeah, like I guess from completing so many different farm visits, you just get to chat to an entire range of farmers, from, you know, people who are really doing things in an old school way to people who are really trying to, what is the word, push the envelope, is it, and really try new techniques and farm in a very innovative way. And for me, this kind of stuff is really, really interesting. And there are a kind of a subset of farmers that I have met who are really, really, really focusing on kind of the inputs to their system and trying to make their farming system as efficient as possible. So they're really embracing things like sort of climate change and carbon storage, and trying to future-proof their farms against future maybe shortages in water tied into climate change, etc. So you see different people, and it's not just on the arable side, but people trying these kind of more, I think the term that kind of draws them all together is probably restorative agricultural techniques. But these can range from kind of livestock practices, whereby you're trying to promote things like mob grazing, which increase kind of the productivity of the land, but also increase the amount of carbon stored within the soils, right through to more arable systems where you have people experimenting with things like min till or low till or reduced tillage. There's an entire range of different like language here that's sort of new to me, to be honest. And I know people have experimented with these in England and in other countries, but due to some of the challenges in Scotland with kind of things like establishing cover crops, sometimes having to complete work in less than ideal kind of weather conditions, has meant that there's a fresh set of challenges here. But there are farmers who are really working in this way, and I find that kind of way of thinking really, really interesting. And it's probably the way at least part of the industry needs to move, to be kind of ahead of these big issues that we're all talking about, whether it's addressing biodiversity issues, addressing water issues, carbon issues, climate change, all of these things. And it's just really, really great to see these farmers really being 10 steps ahead of where any regulation that we can do can get us.
Yeah, I mean, it is great. It's seeing these steps forward in how farms are managing their whole site and looking at the whole thing holistically is great. And I think the really important thing that you bring up there is that I think the work and the reputation that the land unit and now the National Rural Unit has done by actually acknowledging the fact that this is a sector that is really dynamic and really important for Scotland. And we've got this working relationship, not just with the individual land managers and farmers, but also on a regional and national basis with the organisations such as SRUC, NFUS, Scottish Land and Estates. We've took the time to really build upon this great communication that we've got amongst them, which means that when we've got an idea, we can sell it to them. We've already done the hard work behind it, which is great. And it means we can get out on site and people already know who we are. We don't have to spend half an hour kind of explaining what SEPA is and what SEPA does. They've already got an idea of the kind of open working relationship that we've got with the sector, which is brilliant. One of the things that SEPA has started over the last couple of years is looking toward dealing with industries in Scotland on a sector-wide approach for the agricultural sector. We've split it up into several areas.
For me, like SEPA are trying as an organization to organize ourselves around sectors. And this kind of can come into any area of SEPA's work, but it also does fully encompass the rural sectors. It's kind of funny for someone like, I think our team, I think we feel like we've been working in this kind of sector type way or sector focus way for many years now. And I think that's resulted in a lot of the good work we've discussed already, such as like individual measures being completed on farms, and also that important development of a working relationship that you've described, both with the individual farmers, but also with the wider industry. And that's something I think that kind of a model that SEPA are going to build on across a lot of our different work. But I think it's important to kind of highlight that like SEPA are very, very keen on the agriculture sectors developing and continuing to prosper within Scotland. I think what we're trying to push is that these sectors become as efficient as they possibly can and produce food in a way that benefits Scotland, benefits the farm, benefits the environment as well, and addresses some of those big issues that we talked about earlier, like climate change, etc. So the whole sector approach is about SEPA and the industry working together to address these big challenges. We're not going to get anywhere releasing or coming up with new regulations or having a kind of a big stick approach. It's about the entire sector, that supply chain, all working together to move the industry in a sustainable direction.
So thanks very much, Adam and Julie, for giving us a bit of a brief insight into the work that the National Rural Unit do, and also the collaborative work we do with the likes of Farming and Water Scotland and all the other external stakeholders we deal with. If you would like to find out more information, go to the Farming and Water Scotland website. And if you'd like to get hold of the National Rural Unit within SEPA, you can send us an email at nationalrural@sepa.org.uk. And thanks very much for listening, and tune in for the next podcast, which will be coming up soon. Thank you very much.